Vic Sage and the Projectionist, hosts of the Saturday Frights podcast, while working in the Retroist vault, find themselves under assault from a force of evil, an evil from the Projectionist's past. In an effort to save the vault, they're forced to carry out an emergency lockdown. With no possibility of escape, the two must enter a makeshift portal, linking them to the Projectionist's haunted drive-in. Being shoved through the portal by his co-host, Vic Sage vanished. He awoke to find himself transported to the haunted drive-in, but in the past of an alternate timeline. Due to a malfunction in the portal, the duo were merged into one being, with Sage being stuck in the Projectionist's younger body, and his co-host trapped deep within Sage's subconscious, acting as his voice of reason. The only link to their own timeline was a portable recording device, disguised as a small briefcase, acting as their only communication to the Retroist Vault and possibly their only way home.
And now, on with the show.
It feels good to be back at the Starbright Family Fun Drive-In, Victor.
Agreed, Projectionist. I was shocked at how quickly that mechanic was able to get Nancy's car up and running.
You mean after the 2-hour wait for the tow truck, that is?
Yeah, at least you were able to get that haunted coachman of Cherry Hill off our trail. Kind of fortunate that since I didn't bring a shovel, we found one at the cemetery. Wasn't exactly looking forward to using my hands.
Yes. At the very least, the incantation was successful. I will admit that I had my doubts. That type of protection is not the most reliable. Not when wounds have been cast upon you.
So you're positive it was Bill Darnell?
Without a doubt.
I think we're going to owe Nancy a big apology about being over a day late. I hope her parents didn't give her too much of a hassle.
Sage, where are the drive-in employee vehicles?
Huh. Yeah, we made it back in time for tonight's feature. Leonard should be opening the box office in about an hour and a half. The concession attendant should already be here, cleaning up and getting the food prepared.
Something isn't right here, Sage. Watch yourself for both our sakes.
Hey, the briefcase recording light is on. Friends, I'm not sure how much you might have heard, but the Projectionist and I have just returned to the Starlight Starbright drive-in. But for some reason, there's no one here. It's just us.
Look, there's something taped to the outside door of the concession stand.
Yeah, it looks like it's from Bill, actually. To our faithful patrons, the Starlight Starbright Family Fun Drive-In's performance this evening has been canceled due to the recent tragedy. We thank you for your understanding as well as your thoughts and prayers. What happened? We were only gone like 2 days.
They fell in love on that lonely beach and kissed on the silver sand till the water was red. Till the water was red from the setting sun.
Okay, I'm not sure what the drive-in was trying to tell us, but that's not making me feel much better.
Bill Darnell happened. I am positive we will learn the details all too soon.
Yeah? I hope the Retroist can get us home soon.
Before Bill Darnell releases another hint upon us, you mean?
Sure. I guess we'll have some explaining to do with Bill. We were only supposed to be gone for the one day, after all.
I wouldn't worry about that. He has made his first play, and the ball, as they say, is in our court.
What do you think we should do?
If this were our timeline, I would break into his office and take care of a few items that gives him an unfair advantage. With your skills, though, you would end up bungling the job.
Thanks.
Best to play it safe for the time being. Act dumb. That shouldn't be too difficult for you. Besides, I'll wait until you go to sleep.
What did you say?
Oh, nothing.
How about we change the subject?
Yes. Perhaps now would be the time to do our Saturday Frights broadcast. Help us take our minds off our woes.
That's a good idea. Well, friends, this is a first for us on Saturday Frights. We will be discussing an episode of the classic Outer Limits television series. An episode entitled The Mutant. I know it seems like we've been sort of butting heads on the last couple shows, Projectionist, but I believe we can spill the beans that you didn't seem to care for this episode.
I most certainly did not. But let us not paint me as the villain right out of the gate, eh? There are parts I did appreciate. It boasts a fine cast, for example. But what did you think of The Mutant?
I feel bad for saying this, since it is our first Outer Limits episode, but I think it just didn't click. Like you mentioned, it does have a great cast. Also, the premise is great. I just feel it didn't come together like it should. Perhaps like The Twilight Zone, it would work better as a half-hour offering instead of almost an hour.
Let us hold off on going into further detail until you are finished with your excruciating synopsis.
All right. The Mutant was originally broadcast on ABC back on March 16th, 1964. The teleplay was by Alan Balter and Robert Mintz, from a story by Jerome B. Thomas. It was directed by Alan Crosland Jr., and like we've stated, it has an embarrassment of riches in regards to who is starring in it. You have none other than the Wild Bunch's Warren Oates, Bubba Hotep's Larry Pinnell, Reanimator's Robert Sampson, Walter Burke, who you might know best from the James Garner Support Your Local Gunfighter series of films, and Betsy Joan Moreland, from the cult classics Last Woman on Earth and Creature from the Haunted Sea.
Ah, yes. I thought she looked familiar.
The story for The Mutant concerns a remote scientific research expedition situated on an alien planet, one that has been claimed by the United Nations and christened Annex 1. That planet also happens to suffer from sudden dust and rainstorms that sweep its surface. Radioactive storms at that. Another interesting feature about Annex 1 is it has no night, so its landscape is barren, desert-like. The harsh conditions require that the small research team wear protective goggles with dark lenses when outside at all times. And of course, take shelter when those storms start up. Dr. Evan Marshall, played by Pinnell, is landing on Annex 1, investigating the research station as communication has ceased and their last reports have been strange. Nothing exactly up front, but to those monitoring the reports, like Marshall, something seems amiss.
Things are most certainly amiss. The research scientists are living in perpetual fear of one of their own.
Absolutely, Projectionist. The one they fear is Reese Fowler, played by Warren Oates. It turns out he got caught in one of the radioactive storms, and it mutated him, hence the title of the episode. His eyes have become overly large. I mean, like the size of softballs.
It is a rather nice special effect, especially for the time it was made.
Agreed. The eyelids have been stretched by the growth of his eyeballs. It is simultaneously disturbing and fascinating. Warren Oates uses it to great effect as well. Most of the time, while he's doing something horrible, just staring with those humongous eyes, he has a great big grin spread across his face. It's a nice juxtaposition of the horror of those staring eyes with their cat-like pupils. Now you might be rightfully thinking, what is so bad about all of that? Sure, he might be hard to look at across the dinner table, but what makes him so dangerous? It turns out that the radiation from the storms, while mutating his eyes, also gifted him telepathic abilities.
Where's Dr. Marshall?
I don't know. He's probably in the lab.
When he gets ready to go, I'll put the component back in the communication system. The moment he contacts Earth, I'll remove it. If anyone speaks one wrong word during that moment, what did you do? With the suit?
I put it away. I put it in my locker.
Don't think it. Block it out. Don't think what, Lieutenant? Block it. Block it. Block it. Block it. Block it.
He can now read minds, and when angered, which is something easy to do, when Fowler's paranoia kicks in, he can obliterate you with a single touch.
Which, as we learn, is what he has done to Julie Griffith's husband, the former leader of the research group.
Julie is played by Jones Moreland and happens to have been a love interest to Dr. Marshall back on Earth. Everyone is walking on eggshells when Evan arrives, so he knows something is up, but he can't put his finger on it. Oh, I forgot to mention that Fowler continuously wears his goggles so that Marshall doesn't immediately see something is wrong.
It is not long after Dr. Evan Marshall's arrival, however, that Rhys Fowler begins to lose his hold on sanity.
You're absolutely right. He disintegrates Robert Sampson's character for trying to slip a note into Evan's astronaut suit. He ends up scaring Walter Burke's character so badly that the older man trips and ends up cracking his head open and bleeding out. At that point in the episode, Fowler realizes the game is up. If he can't stop Julie and Evan from taking off, he will be stranded on NX-1.
You should also mention Rhys Fowler's phobia of darkness.
It's not a phobia, projectionist.
It most certainly is. We see incidents where he is terrified of the prospect of being in the dark.
True, but not because it's a phobia. The darkness literally causes him excruciating pain. I suppose his mutation means he needs constant light now.
Then wouldn't those dark goggles hurt him too?
You have a point there. I guess it needs to be total darkness, like in the cave nearby the research station he chases Julie and Evan into. They distract him as he rushes inside by leaving a single burning candle, which, as he makes a beeline towards it, gives the two scientists time to exit the cave. Fowler, searching for them, drawn to the candle like a moth, goes too far into the cave and literally stumbles, extinguishing the flame of the candle. We, the viewers, hear his death cry as the darkness envelops him, leaving Marshall and Julie as the sole survivors of NX-1. Throughout the episode, the two show signs of rekindling that flame they once had for each other, so we are left with the notion that they will embrace that fully as they travel back to Earth, possibly warning the UN that NX-1 is too dangerous to try and colonize. And that, friends, is the full synopsis for The Mutant. Now, how about we really put our cards on the table, projectionist? Do you really dislike this episode, or do you feel as I do, that this could have been a great episode, and for various reasons, they didn't stick the landing? I guess what I'm asking is, do you think The Mutant is just okay overall?
I despise it. It is single-handedly one of the worst things we've watched for these radio broadcasts.
Wow! Okay, it's not that bad.
Having mentioned the strength of the performances in this television offering, I must single out the failure of Betsy Jones Moreland as Julie Griffith. She doesn't seem scared by Rhys Fowler as much as appearing to be suffering from indigestion.
Come on now, projectionist. Look, I think the mutant might really suffer from that running time, as certain moments feel like they are merely added in there to pad it out, especially in regards to Julie and Marshall's romance. So, you enjoyed Warren Oates' performance, though, right?
Most assuredly. He by far carries the episode as far as he can. His behavior when speaking to Dr. Evan Marshall and the others, it is just a little off, as if he is no longer comfortable speaking with them.
Fowler has a bit of an invisible man complex, in that he sees himself as being superior now to the rest of the scientists at the research station, but also despises himself for what he has become. Much like that H.G. Wells character, like I've already mentioned, he has moments of extreme paranoia. And Warren Oates, well, his charm makes you kind of smile wickedly as he lords it over the others. One of the things I didn't care for was, in fact, the ending. It's rather abrupt.
That is putting it mildly. Perhaps Alan Crossland Jr. happened to glance down at his wristwatch and realized they needed to wrap it up within 2.5 minutes.
Well, it felt like to me, and this is of course my opinion, that they were building everything up to a confrontation between Marshall and Fowler. Then, when it basically is wrapped up with, and we let him into the cave where he stumbles and the candle is extinguished, killing him with the darkness. It just feels off. Now, I'm wary of making you listeners think that I just hated this episode. That isn't the case. If I have to give it a star rating, I would say the mutant gets 3.5, maybe 4 stars out of 5.
Oh, I strongly disagree. This is at most a 2.
Man, I think you're being too harsh here. Do you have any vintage ads for the listeners?
Indeed I do.
Through the shrouded mist, it is coming. The final phase of an accident of nature.
Nothing human can have this in its veins and live.
It is unexplainable, unbelievable, and uncontrollable. You can't see it in the darkness or hear it in the silence, but you can feel its presence and sense the danger. Mutant.
Don't go out there.
Its time has come.
Let me! Let me!
There is no place left to run. Nowhere left to hide. Mankind's deadliest threat will not come from the skies. Mutant.
Before we jump into the notable cast and crew, I'd like to share how I first came into contact with the Outer Limits series.
Of course! Drag him out!
What?
Nothing. Please regale us.
Okay. Much like the Twilight Zone TV show, as I was growing up, my father told me a bit about some of the more memorable episodes he watched in his youth. Some of those classic episodes of The Outer Limits included The Zonti Misfits, The Bolero Shield, I, Robot, and The Sixth Finger. In all honesty, I think my father liked The Outer Limits series even more than The Twilight Zone, as he was always drawn more to science fiction than horror. Although, like in The Mutant, we can see they can be combined. I mean, look at Alien, right? Well, fast forward to my young adulthood and the opening of the local Blockbuster Video. In their TV section were a handful of episodes released by MGM Home Video, including two just amazing episodes, The Architects of Fear, starring the greatest American heroes Robert Culp, and The Demon with a Glass Hand, also starring Culp, but from a story by Harlan Ellison. While they didn't have the complete Outer Limits series there, they had a good 10 or so tapes, enough to give me a taste and realize I liked The Outer Limits. I do believe, by the way, that the entire series is now readily available on Hulu, if you want to see it too.
What's it?
Ah, forget about it, projectionist. Alan Crossland Jr. got his start directing episodes of Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. He directed 4 episodes of the original Twilight Zone, such as The Parallel, The Old Man in the Cave, which we will cover at some point in this show, Ring-a-Ding Girl with Carol Burnett, and The Seventh is Made Up of Phantoms, which also starred Warren Oates. He also directed quite a few episodes of The Bionic Woman and Wonder Woman. Warren Oates, besides being known for The Wild Bunch, also had notable roles in 1967's In the Heat of the Night, 1973's Dillinger, and Badlands, but might be best known for his role in 1981's comedy Stripes as Sergeant Hulka. Larry Pinnell had a full acting career with notable appearances in TV's Ripcord, where he played Ted McKeever for 75 episodes. He was seen in The Beverly Hillbillies for 10 episodes as Dash Riprock. He was in John Carpenter's made-for-TV movie Elvis, where he co-starred with Kurt Russell, and in one of his last roles, he played Murphy in the Firefly episode entitled Shindig. Robert Sampson may not have had much screen time in The Mutant, but besides 1985's Reanimator, where he played Dean Halsey, he was also in 1980's City of the Living Dead, 1989's totally underappreciated Robot Jocks, 1991's The Arrival, and in one of his last roles, voiced John Breitling in 1998's video game Rainbow Six. Betsy Jones-Moreland, no matter what my co-host might think, went on to appear in 1975's The Hindenburg and 1976's The Last Tycoon, co-starring with Robert De Niro. But she was also in 7 of the Perry Mason TV movies in the early 90s as Judge Eleanor Harrelson. And friends, I think that about wraps up this episode. On behalf of the projectionist and myself, we thank you for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. At the beginning of the show, our opening was provided by Metagirl. Our ending theme is entitled Twisted Toys and was composed by the talented Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Of course, I have to give thanks for the invaluable feedback to my co-host, The Projectionist. Where can your fans find you if they wish to contact you?
I do not care for current technological standards, but I am sometimes on the Facebooks. Projectionist Haunted Drive-In.
Friends, you may not be aware, but The Projectionist has his very own show now.
Yes, The Projectionist's Sinister Tales of Terror.
Do you want to tell the listeners where they can find your show?
You can find it upon the Internet Archive. And I believe it is coming back to the Retroist.
That looks like to be the case. If you are new to our show, we do have a Saturday Frights Facebook page. And we would greatly appreciate it if you could stop by and give us a like. Or even let others know about it. It's another spot where we can share our love of retro horror with you. And not have to wait until Saturday to do so. The podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher, and if you could click subscribe and give us a rating and maybe a nice review, we would really appreciate it. I can be found nearly every day on The Retroist. If you have any suggestions for future shows or even feedback, you can contact me at VicSage@Retroist.com. We owe a great debt of gratitude to The Retroist himself. When you have retro needs, and we all do, just head over to www.retroist.com. Until next time, remember to replace your car's speaker on its post before leaving the drive-in.
I will take you places where you have never been.
For the start.
I will show you things that you have never seen.
Beginning.
And I will see the life run out of you.
Long ago, on a cold, dark night, in this peaceful New England village, something happened. Something too terrifying to remember. Something too frightening to forget. Something that has remained a secret until now.
Is anyone else seeing these? Am I the only one having nightmares?
Universal Pictures presents Fred Astaire, Melvin Douglas, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., John Houseman, Ghost Story, from the terrifying best-selling novel by Peter Straub.
Who's this?
He's found a picture of her.
That's not possible.
The girl, the men, the evil, the silence.
Dad, I'm
telling you, something happened. I'm telling you something. I think he may have been murdered.
The house, the fear, the nightmare, the vengeance, the terror, the truth.
Not now, Rick.
Yes, now. Something's happening. Something terrible. I fear that more of us are going to die.
No, we must talk about it.
She is not the person that you think she is.
Who are you?
Oh, no, please, let's not stop.
She's worried you have the wrong idea about her.
Everything about her is wrong.
No, please. Please, let me talk about her.
Get away from her, Dave.
What are you?
She's dangerous.
Listen to me, please.
Soon they will learn that they have never been forgiven. Ghost Story. The time has come to tell the tale.
This has been a RetroWest production. Goodbye.